you know, the wife who is considered an official wife. Yes.
Pardon me? The sons of Keturah, it's left out over there. Why do I mention them? Because if you take a look at Tosfos Sons, he questions Rashi over here. He says Rashi is not right because he didn't mention the sons of Keturah. Right. So he has a different count. Yeah.
Okay, the question I have is that historically, weren't they all of these descendants of that, weren't they separated long ago from their Jewish brethren?
Yeah, but still, it doesn't mean that they were completely separate.
Well,
mean,
for
still,
example, they would not have been included, or they would not have been in, what would they have been, again, historically, in terms of status? They would not have been, would not have been in Egypt.
No, they weren't in Egypt.
No.
No, only the people of Israel went to Egypt.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and yet they are here.
Yeah.
For the funeral.
Right. They heard that Yaakov Avinu passed away and he's going to be buried in Hebron in Eretz Machpelah. And so they came to escort the Leviah.
This is
our daughter. Huh?
This is
our daughter. Yeah, of course, it's our daughter, absolutely. I mean, the Torah don't find out. It just mentioned it. It says that the retinue went up and they came to Goren Hatod, and the people, the Canaanites who were over there, said, Abel Kovetzel Mitzrayim, oh, look, there's great spirit of mourning among the Egyptians, because I mean, to them, I guess they couldn't tell the difference between Egyptians and Jews, you know, between the Egyptians and Joseph and his brothers, okay? And so therefore they called the place to work out. And then, of course, where did they eventually come to? They came to Hebron, you know, to Master Machpelah, where Yaakov was buried, okay?
Yeah.
Alright, so obviously the report came through. People had communication thousands of years ago too. Granted that they didn't have what we have today, you know, all the electronic methods of communication. Nevertheless, communications did exist.
Yeah.
Mail was being sent from one place to another. People were continually going on business trips, and whenever they would go on business trips, you know, they would always bring the reports of what happened back home and things like that. So, the result was that when they heard, you know, that Yaakov was being buried and, you know, all this honor was being shown by the Egyptians to them, so that they came also to participate. Okay? This is the point of the, yeah. So as I said before, Rona, in Tosfos' sons, over there, he disputes the count and he introduces Keturah and he has a different count over there. Okay? You take a look at it, to the side over there. Okay? Right, so the Talmud Lamed Vav Sarim and Nisnu, right by Moshe. We have this tradition.
Why is the count important?
Why is it important?
Yeah.
I would say it's important for the simple reason that it indicates the great honor, first of all, in which Yaakov Avinu was held. Secondly, the great honor in which Yosef HaTzadik was held. Okay? In other words, it's a reward to him because of the fact that he is taking all this trouble to go, I mean, to leave his post as viceroy in Egypt and to go and to leave the procession to bury his father, when they could have delegated, let's say to his brothers, look, I can't leave, I have such an important job over here, so Pharaoh needs me, you know, so I can't go, but he didn't do that. Instead, he led the procession to go to
there. And that would tie into the response of the population because of the importance of how they rewarded, regardless of the distance, because it's
But wouldn't it be just sufficient to say he was there was great many dignitaries there, and that the count is
they like a number.
Okay.
Yeah, but
and 36 sounds good. After all, twice high.
Twice high. That was my next question. Do you think that that the trying to fit it into 36 is in some way symbolic with that?
36 righteous.
Right.
Yeah,
of course,
yeah,
it's another.
Yeah,
one.
Yeah,
you
it's
have,
another
you know,
number.
Lamed Vav Tzadik.
Yeah, yeah.
36 righteous people. So,
so
36 is a
so
very nice
number.
So they
kind of using a shoehorn to get the fit.
Okay. All right. So, as I said, Tosfos Sanz gives a different count over there. If you take a look, we'll take a look for a couple of moments and then we'll continue. He says over there, all right, 36, right? So, Yud Beis Nisim Nishmael, all right. So, first of all, Yishmael's 12 Nisim, right? And then he says, Yud Dalad, and the 14, Da'alufei B'nei Esav, right?
Yeah.
Among the various Da'alufim, and Haksum Nesed of Yishlach, right? And then it says, Ume B'nei Keturah, right?
Don, Yokshon, Don, Didyon, Yishbok, Shuach, Sohare, Shishon, right? So there are six. The Yokshon, Yolada, Shavovi is the Don, so he's counting them too, okay? The Shvor, Tola, Kisro, Shal, Aviv. So he says, Shvor hung the crown that belonged to his father over there. Well, Midyon, he says, Horish, Kisro, Lehevonov. Whereas Midyon took his crown and instead he gave it up, he gave it as a Yerusha to his five sons. All right. So at any rate, if you go to the very, so as I say, so since he didn't contribute his, so that's the sons, that's Chanuch, the Eifer, the Eifer, the Avido, the Ador, so that's five Ksarim, right? So in that case, we see Hare Yud B'nei Keturah. So we already counted 26 before, so if we take 10 crowns from B'nei Keturah, then that makes Lamed Vav Ksarim. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, so he likes his count better than he likes Rashi's count. So that's all done. Right.
Well, it's important enough to mention it.
The Olam Habo, you know, when the taste for sons meets Rashi, they can argue out the point, okay? As to which count was correct.
They are.
Yeah.
What about
this
Yosef?
Huh? And what about Yosef? Yeah, what about Yosef? Right, according to Rashi, Yosef is there.
It's counted.
Yeah, right, right, right.
Yeah,
right. Whereas over here, if you count 36, you wonder, so where is Yosef? You're absolutely right. Okay, so this is why. All right, so afterwards, you know, he goes into the problem with it. But at any rate, I'm not interested at this particular point in arguing the merits of one position against the other. If Rashi says it, Rashi HaKodesh says it, in other words,
good
enough for us. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. All right. So, getting back over here now to the text. All right. So we see that everybody got into the act by honoring the Oren of Yaakov by surrounding it with their various crowns, right? And then the pasuk over there, the Torah continues, and it says, "Yeah, vayispedu shom mispeid godol bechoved biyo." Right? And there, in Goren Ha'otot, in other words, they had very great and literally grievous or heavy mourning. Okay, they were in deep mourning over there. Okay, so Tana, we have a tradition that says afilu susim afilu chamore, even the horses and the donkeys, they also wept. So you'll say, I mean, how come? So, you know, again, you know, various commentators have tried to work out you know, this little pasuk, right? This little maimer, right? So one explanation is that because they were so busy with the burial and all the ceremonies, you know, that took place, you know, what if they all gave a hesped or something like that, you know, it was really mispaid god over there, you know, if everybody got up and gave a half hour hesped, you know, I don't have to tell you, with drag and drag and drag, right? So at any rate, they said they didn't have time to give their donkeys and their horses food.
Yeah.
So they started in today or whatever they do, you know, and this was interpreted as being you know, a sign of mourning. Okay. No. All right. And then there are two mysterious words over here, Ne'elu, Ne'elu. Nobody explains them. So I have to come up with a theory. First of all, according to, why is it in parentheses? Because, according to some, it doesn't belong over there. Okay. You see, in the margin on the right over there, Samachalef, Lamed Gimel, Samachalef means Sefer Achir, in other words, another text that we have. Okay. So it's Lo Garsin, and they don't have this reading. Which would be the simplest explanation, simply take it out. But if you say it belongs in the text, so I'm trying to figure out what is Me'elu Me'elu. So I have to say, it means that the horses and the donkeys, whoever was there, Me'elu Me'elu, in other words, Jews, Egyptians, whoever it was, they came in order to, you know, to mourn, and they even they participated in the mourning. All right. Now, what happens, Kevan Shei Gilu Moris Machpelah? What happens when they finally got to the Cave of Machpelah? Aha! Also, Esav. Esav came. Kome Akev. And what? He said, I demand that you stop everything right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Why? So he says, Omalehem, he said unto them, Mamre, Kiryas Arba, hi Hebron. Pasuk says, Mamre, the city of the four, this is Hebron. Now, of course, what is the city of the four? So we know, I mean, according to the tradition, the city of the four means that Odom and Chava over there, right? Abraham and Sarah are over there, and Yitzchak and Rivka are over there, and Leah was already buried over there. Mm-hmm. So the question is, who gets the remaining lot? Sure, we would say Jacob, right?
Right.
Yeah, but Esav is Esav.
Oh.
Esav wants the plot.
He had his eye on
Leah. Of course. Esav wants that plot. What do you think? So, that being the case, you know, he's there, he's protesting. He says, well, okay, right, you've got to put a stop to it. He says, well, Omar Rabbi Yitzchak. And Rabbi Yitzchak says, Kiryas Arba, why is it called Kiryas Arba? He says, Arba Zukos, for you, right? There are four pairs over there, Adam and Chava, as I've said already, Abraham and Sarah, right, Yitzchak and Rivka, and Yaakov and Leah. But, naturally, Ehu Kivar Leleah Bendida, right? He buried Leah alone over there, right? But the high the fayish, he says, but there's still one more left over. So he said, Didihu, this belongs to me. So Amrulay, they said to him, oh, hold it, Esau. He says, Zindinta, you sold it. When did he sell it? In other words, he's saying that when he sold his birthright, he also sold automatically the right to this other caver over there. So Amaluhu, so he said to them, Nehi dizvine bechirusa shitintusa mi yezvine. He says, wait a minute. You mean to tell me that just because I sold my birthright, therefore I've sold everything else? Amrulei, so they said to him, in, ya. Never confuse the word Aleph Yud Nun in Hebrew with the Aramaic. In Aramaic, in means yes. But of course, in Hebrew, ain, although it's the same letters, but it means no, not. Okay? All right. So they said to him, yes. That's exactly what we're saying. Dixiv, as is written, Bikivri Asher Kori Sili. It's written, you see, when Yaakov, you know, charges his sons, you know, just before his death, and he tells them, you know, that I want you to bury me Bikivri in my grave, Asher Korisi Li. Now, the question is only, what is the meaning of the word Korisi? One translation of the word Korisi is that I dug out for myself. I mean, because in the Machpelah, you know, since it's a cave, so they had to dig out a place. But, as we'll see now, it might possibly mean something else. Ba'amar Rabbi Yochanan, that Rabbi Yochanan said, B'shem Rabbi Shimon ben Yehudah, said the name of Shimon ben Yehudah, he said, Ein Kira, Ela L'shem Mechira. He says, the word Kira, where it says Korisi, this really means over here, I sold. Or bought, you know, the idea of buying and selling, okay? Shekain, because we know that the Krakei Hayom, that in the big cities that are on the seacoast, on the Mediterranean seacoast, Koril Nimechira Kira. They call a sale Kira. In other words, the mem is missing, but they call it Kira. So in that case, in other words, they're saying to him, look, Asher Korisi, Yaakov Avinu is telling his sons, I paid for the Moris HaMachpelah, I bought it. Okay?
With the
Nevels. Right. I bought it together with, presumably, you know, with the Bechorah. Right. So Amalahu, so he said to them, but you know, Esav doesn't accept it. And he says, Havali Garta, show me the letter. Show me the deed that you sold it, okay, that you bought it. Okay? So Amulai, so they said to him, yeah, we got a deed. Igarta Biyadam Mitzrayim hi. You know where the deed is? It's in the land of Egypt, he says. So, Man Nazel, so who should go back to Egypt and bring back the deed in order to show? So there's Naphtali. Let Naphtali go over there. Why? The Kaliel Kiyayata, because he is as swift, as fast as a gazelle. In other words, he can run very, very fast. Okay? Because the Pasuk says, again, you know, in the bracha that Yaakov gave to his children, it says over there, Naphtali Ayolo Shlufa. Naphtali is like a hind or a gazelle, whatever you want to call it, when it comes to these animals, right? He's like one who is let loose. In other words, he runs swiftly. Yes.
He's going to run
several hundred miles.
Yes. Yes, of course. But I guess they figured, you know, that he was very good. He must have been a marathon runner or something. Okay. So Hanosein Imrei Shofar, literally, who gives forth words of beauty. But what is Imrei Shofar? He says, "Bravo." He says, "Al tikre Imrei Shofar, ela Imrei Sefer." Says, read it not like a litvak, but read it instead like a galatia. Okay, read it. That's the other way around.
Okay.
Fact is, I mean, my parents came from Lip and they pronounced shins like shins and sins like sins. But nevertheless, I've also heard some Litvakers, you know, who pronounce
they
right,
them.
They reverse it.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So that the sh becomes,
yeah.
So becomes sh, right.
Fizz. They
yeah,
used to
right.
say fizz.
It's sabish.
Yeah.
Sabish.
Yeah.
All right. So at any rate, he says, don't read it as shefer, but read it as sefer. In other words, he's there in order to get the words of the document. Okay, this is what sefer means over here. Well, all right, so they sent Naphtali. Okay? Chushim Berei Dedon Taman Hada. So they say, Chushim, the son of Dan, was there, naturally, right? After all, I mean, you can imagine not only did the, you know, the sons of Jacob come, but also their own sons also came along, right? The Enoklach, right? They came also to show honor to their grandfather, okay? So he was there present also. The Yakiran lay Udne. Literally, his ears were heavy on him. In other words, he was deaf, okay? It was hard of hearing, okay? Omaluhu. So he said to them, "My high, tell me what's going on over here." So the Omulay, so they said to him, "Kom Akev Hai. Adosi Naphtali Miyarda Mitzrayim." He says, this guy, of course pointing, you know, to Esav, right, is holding up the works until Naphtali can come from the land of Egypt. Omalahu, so he said to them, Adosi Naphtali Miyarda Mitzrayim, Yehei Abi Abba Muto Bivisolion. Do you mean to tell me that until Naphtali first gets here back, you know, from the land of Egypt, that my grandfather has to lie over here in disgrace? I mean, it is, after all, a disgrace to the dead, you know, to keep them lying in the Oren over there and not burying them the way it's supposed to be done. So you mean to say that you're permitting something like this to happen? Shokal Kulfo, so he grabbed hold of a bat, baseball bat, right? Machye Areshe, and he whacked him over the head. To Esau, right? And Natron Eine, so his eyes fell out. Enoflo Akara de Yaakov. And they fell to the feet of Yaakov. But Chinhu Yaakov the Eine. So you know what? Yaakov opened his eyes for a moment. The Yachich, and he smiled.
He
was happy.
He was dead, but he was happy.
He was dead, but he was happy. At least he's going to get burial now. Okay. The Haina Nitziv, and this is what the Pasuk says when it says, Yismat Tzadik Kichoza Nokom, the righteous rejoices when he sees vengeance take place. Pa'omav Yichatz Bedav HaRosha, he will wash his feet in the blood of the wicked. That very moment, the prophecy that Rivka had given years and years ago was finally fulfilled. What was this the prophecy? As the Pasuk says, Loma Eshkol Gam Shnechem Yom Echad. She said, if you remember, she told Yaakov to flee to her brother over there in the land of Haran, right? To flee to Laban, okay? Why? Because she said, why should I have to go into mourning for both of you at the same time? Because she knows that Esav wants to kill him, right? And so therefore she doesn't want to lose both Esav and Yaakov.
Yeah.
So now both of them are here together, finally united in death. Okay. The Yaakov gav to be sosan lo biyomechad havai. And even though they did not die, at, you know, in the same day, because after all Yaakov had already preceded Esav in death, right? But kvurosan miho, nevertheless, their burial biyomechad havai was in one day. The lo osak. All right. So now the Gemara asks a different question. It says, "Osak be Yosef, achi echav leham misaske be." Says, look. Now, what if Yosef had not attended to the burial of his father? So I said before, what if he had pleaded, you know, that I can't leave Egypt, I'm too important, I can't get out over there, I have to be there next to Pharaoh, right? So, wouldn't his brothers have taken care of it, right? The Hawk Seer, after all, the Pasuk says, Vayisu Oso one of Arzo Canaan, right, that his sons carried him to the land of Canaan. So Amru, they said, "Hanichulo kvodo bimlochim." "Hanichulo kvodo bimlochim Yosef ben Habiyota." So the answer is that they give that they want to give Yosef the opportunity to be there. Why? Because he is like a king, okay? And so the glory caused by the presence of a king is much greater than hedyotos, in other words, of ordinary human beings. I mean, it's obvious. I mean, let's say, whether we like Clinton or not, I mean, but let's say if Clinton were to come to one of our affairs, wouldn't we feel more honored than, for example, if the mayor shows up or something like that? I mean, we know that. I mean, so the same thing, I mean, that, you know, if Yosef, who has the status of a king, can come over there, then in that case, by all means, it's more covered. Okay.
Is this then the end of Esav, and we
yes.
Is this the accepted end of Esav?
According to the
Agada,
yes.
Yeah.
According to the Agada, right?
Yeah. The in the Chumash we don't.
Well,
hear
no, the Chumash we don't hear.
Don't hear
right. No. All that we know is that he goes to his land finally.
Yeah.
After having all these kids over there, you know, at the end of Pasha Vayishlach over there, right? And
he sees him at the grave. That's it.
Yeah, that's it. Doesn't mention even that he came. Doesn't mention that he came to the land. No, no, what the Torah mentions. The Torah does mention that when Avraham Avinu passed away, so there Yitzchak and Yishmael were both present at the funeral. So that it does say.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mention anything more about Esav, you know, once he goes back to his land, and that's it. And it gives a genealogy, and with this befatting with him. Because at this point, the history now goes to Yaakov and his family.
Esav, Esau, they're talking Esau. You got the wrong name.
Then okay, throughout history, I mean, even now we read about Edom.
Edom, of course, absolutely. Yeah. In other words, it's not that Esav becomes, but it doesn't mention his death. That's the question that was asked.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, doesn't mention that. But of course, the role of Esav as being Edom, this is a role that continued throughout Jewish history. Continued, first of all, as long as there was a land of Edom, a kingdom of Edom, where there was always enmity between the Edomites and the Jews, and this enmity continued not only during the time of, you know, the time that the Jews lived in the days of the first temple, but even it continued after the destruction of the first temple, and even with the return of the people of Israel to Eretz Yisrael, and still the Edomites
were
enemies.
Yeah.
Sometimes they refer to them. History is the Idumeans, Idumeans.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's the same thing. It's simply Edomites with a Latin twist, you know. So they remained enemies of the Jewish people. And then, from the point of view of Jewish tradition, Edom became identified with Rome.
Oh, Edom with Rome.
With
not
Rome.
With the Arabs.
No. Yishmael is identified
with
the Arabs. Right.
Okay.
Yishmael is identified with the Arabs.
They're not Amalekites.
Who?
Edomites, I mean.
No. Different people. One was an anti-Semite and the other was an anti-Semite.
So
but they're different. Yeah.
And so they became associated with Rome.
Yes. According to Jewish tradition.
The mass conversions that took place?
Well,
we don't
first
know.
Of all, okay.
I don't want to go astray.
No. Okay.
Yeah.
Jewish tradition, as I said, Edom became the symbol of Rome. So first it became the symbol of Rome as far as Imperial Rome was concerned.
Okay?
Subsequently, when Rome became identified with being the center of Christianity, so at that particular point, then Edom now was used in order to represent Christian Europe. Okay? There is a line, for example, in a poem by Yehuda Halevi, written during the Middle Ages. Okay? And he bemoans the fact that he is still living in Spain while his heart is in Eretz Yisrael. The poem begins, Libi b'mizrach, v'anochi b'sof ma'arav. My heart is in the east, even though I am at the very end of the Western world. Of course, why do we say the end of the Western world? We have to realize from the point of view, if you consider the Mediterranean as being the hub around which Europe and Africa and so on rotated, so where is Eretz Israel? That's in the east, right? Where is Spain? That's Ma'arav, that's the west, okay? And then he says in the next line, Eich et tamat asher achal v'yech yarav. How can I find any taste, any flavor in what I eat? And how can any food be sweet unto me? As long as what? Sion bechevel Edom v'anochi bechevel Arav. As long as Zion is in bondage to Edom, and I am in bondage to Arabia. Now, we have to understand, why does he say what he's saying? He's saying Israel, you know, Zion is in bondage to Edom because at that time, who was ruling them? The answer was the Crusaders. The Crusaders. So as I say, Edom represents Christian Europe, okay? And why does he say that he is in bondage to Arabia? Because who were the rulers in most of Spain in his day? It was the Muslims, you see. Right, the Arabs who were ruling it.
Yeah.
Of course, the end of the poem, you know, is that it says, I would rather, you know, die, you know, over there, and so then to enjoy whatever joys and so on I have over here. And he has other poems in which he shows how they pleaded with him, stay over here, you have everything. You have position, you have family, you have this, you have that, and so on and so forth. And he says, no. In spite of all your enticements, he says, my heart is over there in Eretz Israel, and that's where I want to go, and so on. So, but the reason I quoted it is again to show you the fact that Edom became identified with Christian Europe, whereas Arav, of course, or Yishmael, became identified with the Arabs. Okay.
It's more symbolic identification. It doesn't mean a blood identification.
Yeah, that's correct. There's no question about that. I mean, but nevertheless, I mean. There is something to it, because after all, I agree with you. I mean, Edom is on the other side of the Transjordan, but eventually it was occupied, as was the entire area, by the Romans, and of course there was a fusion between them, and so on, so that the Edomites, you know, so they became good members of the Roman Empire, okay, and such they would therefore pass on the identification over there.
The fusion is easy to understand because it was a shared enmity. It started out as an enmity and there was this imposed enmity, so you can see where that fusion would have come.
Yeah, yes.
Herod was an Idumean or descendant
correct,
of Abraham.
Correct.
So what would, at that point in history, what was the relationship between
okay.
Abraham and Israel?
John Hyrcanus, Yochanan, okay, mm-hmm. had conquered Edom in a war, mm-hmm. okay, and as a result, he forced many of them to become converted to Yeshua. Now, the rabbis never approved of the forced conversion, and they didn't have such great love for Herod either.
True.
Because, as a matter of fact, he killed many of the leading rabbis, and the one thing that they say in his favor is the fact that, you know, he beautified the Beis HaMikdash, that he did. He made it larger, he put in very beautiful decorations over there, marble, which was all kinds of colors that gave you the impression that you were looking at a seascape or something like that. And, so that, they do give him credit for, that it was so beautiful that no one has ever seen a place as beautiful as the Beis HaMikdash built by Herod, okay? But as far as the rest of the actions that he had, his character, even the Romans had a saying, one of the historians, I think it was Tacitus, if I'm not mistaken, who said that it's better to be Herod's pig than Herod's wife. He killed his wife. He had a Jewish wife. She was Mariamne, right, who was the daughter, she was a descendant of the Hashmonaim. In other words, she was from the, Shimon HaMaccabi and so on, the whole dynasty going up to Matas Yohu and so on, okay? And she was, he married her in order to try to get more legitimacy as a monarch, and then he murdered her. Pardon me? Well, that's a question. But anyway, he probably murdered her, right? Look, he murdered his son too. He murdered his son. He was a murderer.
Sister, son.
Yeah, yeah.
Several hundred Kohanim.
Yeah. Yeah. What are you going to do?
Let's continue.
Can't reverse history, but it's a fact. It's important for us to know something about our history too. Yeah.
But that, at that time, really, between the two populations, there's still the same historical enmity, despite the fact that some part of their aristocracy became Jews. Most of the population still had
I mean, look, it's obvious that Herod was not a wholehearted Jew. Okay, obvious. Yeah, he built a beautiful Beis HaMikdash, but he also built a stadium for the Romans, right? He built a theater. You know, you throw the Caesarea, you mean, you see these things over there. He didn't do it because it contributed to Yiddishkeit. He wanted to please the Romans and emulate the kind of civilization that they had, where you can have a gladiatorial combat and stuff like that and so on, which of course was absolutely abhorrent to us. But he rode roughshod on these things. But here and there, I don't know, look. Still had something, I guess, a little pintle of Yid was someplace present in him, with all his evil nature.
The stones of the Kotel, weren't they from Herod?
Some of it.
The bottom.
Right. The bottom, no. The bottom actually goes way back. If you go in the tunnel, right, then you come and you see the stones that go back to Shlomo HaMelech's time.
It has been built up,
during the ages, so that a great deal of the original wall actually is underneath. And we don't, it's beneath the surface of the wall the way it is today. Yeah.
Who was Herod's parents? Has it ever mentioned?
Yeah, he had a father by name of Antipater.
He was Jewish, totally Jewish? No,
Antipater was one of these Edomites or Edomians, who decided for political purposes to become Jewish.
But his mother was Jewish?
His mother probably was Jewish, yeah.
His wife was.
Yeah. But the wife, as I said, she was, Miriam and Mariamne, and she was a descendant of Hashmonai, yeah. The one who actually, among his descendants, who had the most Jewish feeling, mm-hmm. was Agrippa. He was already a different one. He took Yiddishkeit seriously, and he was probably assassinated by the Romans because of that fact. he was thinking that perhaps he would lead a revolt against the Romans and rebuild the Beis Hamikdash and so on and so forth. So he was murdered. You come across the character Agrippa, of course, in the history books to begin with. But if you've seen this I, Claudius, Syrian,
yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
So Agrippa was the bosom pal of Claudius, if you remember. They grew up together in Rome and so on, right? Yeah. But then Agrippa became very Jewish after coming back home from Rome. Whereas, of course, Claudius became the emperor of Rome. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. Okay. Now, we'll do a little bit more and we'll call it a... call it a night. Okay. It says, Mi lo negodol mi Yosef. This is what the Mishnah says over there. Who is someone who is as great as Yosef, and yet, of course, he took the trouble to do what? To go and to bury his father. To perform this act of Gimlis Chasid. Tana Rabba says, Bo urei kama chavivas mitzvahs al Moshe Rabbeinu. He says, come and see how beloved were mitzvahs unto Moshe Rabbeinu. He loved mitzvahs. Shekol Yisrael kulon nisasku bebizo. People of Israel, you know what they were busy doing? They were busy getting whatever spoil of the Egyptians they could get, right? Who nisasek bemitzvahs? But he was busy with performing mitzvahs. Shenemar, as there is a pasuk in the book of Mishlei, which says, Chacham leiv yikach mitzvahs. Someone who is wise in heart, he seeks after mitzvahs. Uminayin ho yodeya Moshe Rabbeinu heichan Yosef kover. Now we come to the question. How did Moshe Rabbeinu know where Joseph was buried? Because what happened? According to the tradition is that the Egyptians did not want the Jews to be freed from Egypt, and so therefore they took the Aron, you know, the coffin containing Yosef, and they threw it into the Nile. So the question is, how would he know where in the Nile to go, you know, to go look for it? Okay. So Omru, so they said that Serach Bas Osher Nishtayro Miyosef Hador. They say that Osher had a daughter by the name of Serach. Okay? And this Serach, she was the last one to remain from her own generation. She was the last survivor of her generation. She was, of course, in other words, she was a daughter to Osher. Osher was the brother of Yosef, right? So that she was one generation removed, but she still remembered, you know, the events, what happened when, you know, when Yosef was buried. Because it's written, remember, that Yosef died, and then all his brothers, and all that generation, okay? This is, you know, we have beginning of Shmos, it's written over there, okay? So, inasmuch as she was the last one to survive from her own generation, she still had the memory of where was the spot in the Nile where Joseph's coffin had been dropped in, right? Holach Moshe Etzlo, so Moshe went to her, Omalo, and he said to her, Klumat Yudas Hechen Yosef Kavur, do you know at all where Joseph is buried? Omalo, so she said to him, Aron shel bateches osolo mitzrayim. He says the Egyptians made for him a metal coffin, ukva'uhu benilis, and they sank it in the Nile, benilis hanoha, right in the river Nile. Kedei sheisborchu meimah. Now, why did they do that? You know, we say it's because they wanted to prevent the gula, but they had a different figure in their mind too. Namely, they felt that if Yosef's body lies in the Nile, then the waters would be blessed. In other words, there would be plenty of water to drink and to irrigate the fields and so on and so forth, so that, you know, that they would have plenty of food as a result. After all, what was Yosef? He was the one who provided them with food in the time of famine, and so therefore the blessing would come to them because of the fact that his coffin was there in the Nile. What?
Is there a midrash that she achieved immortality?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Holach Moshe, so Moshe went, the Yomel Atzfas Nilas, and he stood at the bank of the Nile. Omalu, and he said, Yosef, Yosef, Higia ha'esh, the time has come, shenishba HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given his sworn, she'ani goel eshem, that I will redeem you. The Higia ha'shua, and the time has come for this vow to be fulfilled, she'ishbato es Yisrael, that you also, you know, imposed upon the people of Israel. In other words, what vow? That they should take his bones with them when they left the land of Egypt. The time has come now. Imato mare atzmecha muta. If you show yourself, good. Imla. And if not, hare ona menukim mishwasa. Then in that case, we are freed from your oath. In other words, if you don't keep your end of the bargain by appearing to help us, then, you know, we are quit as far as the oath that we took, that we would take your bones out of Egypt. Miyad, immediately, Sof Arono Shal Yosef. The Aron of Yosef floated. Okay, floated. And then the Gemara adds the following. It says, V'yal Tisma Eich Basel Tzav. Says, don't be surprised that iron can float. Sha'arek Siv, because we have a Pasuk, and this is a story that we find concerning the prophet Elisha. It's written over there by Yehihu Echod Mapil Hakira, Hakora. There was a man who was knocking on a beam in order to, you know, to chop it down, right? The Esabazel Nofal Elamayim, and the iron of his axe fell into the water. Okay? And then what happened? So he came, you know, he came to the Novi, to Elisha, and he said to him, Aho Adoni, please, my lord, he says, Vahu Shaul. This is a borrowed axe. In other words, you borrow something, you have to return it to its owner, and I can't give it back. So Vayomer Isha Elohim, so the man of God said, On a Nofal, where did it fall? Vayarehu Esamokim, so he showed him the place. Vayiktsav Eitz, so what did Elisha do? He cut a piece of wood. Vayishlach, Vayashlech Shom, and he threw it into, you know, where the spot was. And when he did that, Vayotzav HaBarzal, and the iron then rose to the surface. So, Vayalodvam Kalvachem. So, we have to say, this is certainly a Kalvachem. A Kalvachem always means that if it's true in case A, then all the more true it should be in case B, right? Ma Elisha, Talmid of Yohu. Elisha was the Talmud of Eliyahu, right? The Eliyahu Talmud of Shal Moshe, and Eliyahu was a Talmud of Moshe. Doesn't mean that, you know, he means, you know, in the spiritual descent, you know, that eventually Eliyahu came in order to fulfill the teachings of Moshe, right? So, in that particular case, so here was only a pupil of Moshe, right? And Sof Barzel Mipanov, and iron was able to float because of him. So Mipnei Moshe Rabbeinu Alachas Cham V'Chama, so certainly all the more so that a metal casket would float because Moshe Rabbeinu prayed that it should happen. Okay? Now there's an alternate story over here. Rabbi Nosson Omer, he has a somewhat different tradition. Says Bekarbit Bekarbanit Shel Malochim Hayah Kovar, says that he was buried like in a sepulcher belonging to kings, okay? A royal sepulcher. That's where they buried Yosef. Holach Moshe, so Moshe went to Yomel al Karbanit Shel Malochim, and so he came to the sepulcher of the kings, and Omar, and he said, Yosef, Higia Eis, Shanishba Kodesh Boku, Shaniku Elesem, and it's the same as before. In other words, the time has come when the Rebbeinu Shel Olam has said that I'm going to redeem you, the Gia Shavua Sheishbat Es Yisrael, and also this is the time to fulfill the oath in which you made the people of Israel swear that, you know, they will take you out of Egypt. Imato Maretz Bechom Mutav, if you show yourself good, Bim Lav Harei Onu Menukim Mishwusef. But if not, then we are, you know, we are quit from the oath that you took. So Baos Hashoah, at that moment, Nizdaza Arono Shal Yosef, the coffin of Joseph shook inside the mausoleum over there, right? Nitolo Moshe, so Moshe took it, Vio Etzlo, and he brought it together with him. In other words, he brought it with him when he left Egypt, and he carried it with him. The Cholosan Shonim, and all those years, Sheho Yisrael Bamidbar, that the people of Israel were in the wilderness, right? Hoyushne Aronis Halolo, there were these two Aronos, Echot Shal Meis, one of them containing a dead body, of course, that's the one with Yosef in it. The Echot Shal Shechina, the other one was the Ark of the Divine Presence, of course, that was in which the Shnei Luchos HaBris were kept, right? And the Halkin Zemze, and they were going, they were moving together one with the other. And when people would pass by, Omrim, they would say, Mati Bon Shoshne Aronas Halolu. What is behind all these, both of these? What do they contain? In other words, what are they? So, Omru, so they told him, Echod Shal Meis, the Echod Shal Shechina, right? One belonged to a dead person, and the other one to the Divine Presence. So, the question is, Chim HaDarko Shal Meis, Da'alochim Shechina. What is this, the way that it should be that a mess should go hand in hand together with the Divine Presence? Omru, so they said, the very top of the page, okay? As you saw, the last words were the words that you heard on the recording over here. Kiyem zeh kol ma shekosav zeh. In other words, this man, Yosef, fulfilled everything that was to be found in this, meaning the ark containing the tablets, the covenant of God. So now Rashi comments on that, and this is what we'll start with tonight. We'll start with the Rashi at the very top of the page. Okay? I hope my voice will hold out. We've had a lot of trouble.
Is it the same cold?
Yeah, it's the same thing. I don't know whether it's a cold, an allergy, or what the devil that is. All I know is it's not so good. But Yotzah Hashem, the Rabbeinu Shalom, I hope will give me the chaos in order to see me. Okay, Rashi says, Ki em zeh ma shekosav zeh, right? In other words, he, meaning Yosef, fulfilled what was written in the other ark, which was, in other words, the Ark of the Covenant, right? So he says, Agod azul nefereshes b'mechil to the pashas v'yehi b'shal ha'parach. Says, this legend is explained in the Mechilta, in the chapter which deals with Parsha B'Shalach, by Yibishalach Paro. Now, first of all, let me say, what is the Mechilta? The Mechilta is one of the earliest of the Midrashim that we have. Okay? And the Midrashim generally fall into two different categories. Of course, what does Midrash itself mean? That's the first thing we have to explain. Midrash means literally interpretation. When a Rav gives a drash, right? So in other words, he takes a text and he gives an interpretation to it. This is the basic idea behind it. Of course, I had a teacher many, many years ago, we have a lichtig in Gan Eden, he was very good, and he said, when a rabbi gets up to preach, he says, the text is really a pretext. But I trust that when I get up to speak, it isn't always a pretext. Okay. At any rate, the Midrashim, as I said, are divided into two general categories, although there are many, many divisions that you could have. One of them is what we would call Midrash Halacha, and the other one, of course, is Midrash Agada. Okay? Now, by Midrash Halacha, we mean that the primary purpose of this particular Midrash is to interpret the various laws, the halachas that we have mentioned in the various places of the Torah, right? For example, you have what we call the Sifra. This is based upon the explanation of Sefer Vayikra, okay, which has many, many different dinim, dealing first with sacrifices and then after that dealing with other areas as well, and so on. So the Sifra explains it. Then for Bamidbar and for Devarim, you have the Sifrei, which primarily, again, interprets the various laws. And through it, by the way, of course, you know, we see also how many of these laws that we find in these various midrashim are also incorporated in the Talmud as well. Okay? So these are midrashei halacha. Then we have midrashei agada. Agada, as you know, means essentially that we are told a story, or we are told some sentiment, you know, a teaching and so on, in order to instruct us in ethical behavior, or what would be the type of behavior that a Torah observant person should observe. Okay? So these have, there are many midrashei agada. Of course, probably the most famous is what we call the Midrash Rabbah. And for this, there are, you know, there's a Midrash Rabbah for each one of the five books of the Torah, and also for the five Megillahs. We have a Midrash Rabbah. Okay? And, you know, therefore, if we refer to it, we would say, for example, in Bereishis Rabbah, or Shmos Rabbah, or Bamidbar Rabbah, whatever it may be, or in Rus Rabbah, or in Echo Rabbah, and so on, okay? Then, what is the Mechilta? Mechilta is one of the earliest Midrashim, and it's really a combination both of Agada and Halacha. For example, here, where you have right, Bishalach primarily deals with Agada, primarily, not 100%, because there are some dinim in reference to Shabbos, for example, that come later on in connection with the story of the gathering of the manna. Okay? Where there, the idea of Shabbos plays a very important role. Remember, the Torah says, you know, that you have to prepare before Shabbos, and you have to do whatever you do, or you're cooking and baking and so on, has to be done before Shabbos in preparation for Shabbos and so on. So that is already, you know, halacha, but a lot of it is Agada, okay? On the other hand, if you go, let's say, to an earlier one, to Parsha Bo, there you have all the dinim about Pesach, Korban Pesach, and the Seder night, and things like that, and so on. I mean, you know, so there you have a lot of halacha, you see, right? And of course, that also would apply to such things as Tefillin, because that's mentioned in Kaddish Likol before, and so on, okay? So, the Mechilta then is a combination, as I said. Alright, so now he's quoting over here a story in order to try to bring out the fact that Yosef fulfilled everything that was written in the Torah. Well, we might ask, of course, a logical question. Why is Rashi bringing this story over here? Got an answer?
Why is Rashi
bringing this story over here to show that Joseph fulfilled everything written in the Torah?
Since he lived, of course, before, obviously there's a problem.
That's exactly what it is. So that's why he brings this, in order to show that in reality, Yosef did fulfill, even though it was before Matan Torah, but nevertheless he was already fulfilling this. All right. So what is the Agada? It says, "Ksiv bazeh anochi, uksiv bazeh atzachas lehim anochi." All right. What is the first word of the Ten Commandments? Onochi. Onochi Adesham Lokech. Right? I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, etc., etc. Okay. And where do we find the word Onochi mentioned in the story of Joseph? So he says to his brothers, this is at the end, you know, of Sefer Bereishis, when the brothers are saying, you know, that they fall on their knees before him because they're afraid that now that Yaakov Avinu has passed away, that right, you know, that he would take revenge on them, remember? So he says to them, no. He says, can I take the place of God? God planned that it should be this way in order to save our people. So, okay? So, Onochi there in the life of Joseph, and Onochi in the Ten Commandments. All right. Ksiv bezeh lo yelecho, right? It is written in the Ten Commandments, I shall, you know, lo yelecho, there should not be literally unto you any other God. So, right? So he says, Ksiv bezeh ha Elohim ani yorei. It's written actually, yes, Elohim ani yorei. All right, Rashi left out the word S. In other words, he says to Pharaoh, right? He says to him, you know, I fear God. Okay? Alright, then it's written, Lo Tisaw, right? Thou shalt not bear the name of Hashem in vain. So, what did he say? He said, Chei Paro. He did not say as long as God lives. He could have said Kei Hashem or something like that, but he didn't say that. But he said Kei Paro, as long as Pharaoh lives, in order to avoid doing what? To taking God's name in vain. But as we see again, the parallel, right? Then, of course, in Ten Commandments it says, Zohar es Yom HaShabbos, right? Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy, right? So what did he tell the steward when he wanted to invite his brothers over to his house? He says, with the Voach Tevach the Hochem, right? He says to them, slaughter the animal, right? And prepare it. Yeah, and he says, V'yein zez, and this can only refer Eli Yom Shabbos, right? It has to refer to the Shabbos. In other words, he wanted to invite them for Shabbos meal, so naturally it had to be prepared before Shabbos. So again, we see a parallel, right? V'chein hu oimer, right? And likewise it says, V'hochinu es asher yovio, right? And it's likewise, it's some reference also, and he says, that let them prepare whatever they are bringing, right? So we already see that at least for the first four commandments, what do we have? We have already a parallel between Yosef and the Ten Commandments in order to show us that Yosef was actually fulfilling the various commandments written in Ten Commandments. And Rashi now continues, and he makes it shorter, and he says, V'chein kol aseres hadibros, right? Likewise, we find with the rest of the Ten Commandments. It's written, Lo sisna sochicha bilbo becho, right? This, of course, is not actually the Ten Commandments, but the point is, it's in the Torah. I mean, remember, we didn't say he fulfilled only what was written in the Ten Commandments. He said he fulfilled everything that was written here. In other words, other commandments of the Torah. So, if it's written, Lo sisna sochicha bilbo becho, thou shalt not hate thy brother in thy heart. No, so, Yosef actually fulfilled that, as we say, right? Or lo sikom, lo sitor, right? Also, the Torah commands us that we shall not take vengeance and not bear a grudge. And we see that Yosef did the same thing, right? And then it says, v'chei ochicha yimoch, which means, and your brother is also entitled to live just as you are. And actually, what did he do? He provided, not just for his brothers, but he provided for everybody. Achayos amrav, right? The great people. Jews, Egyptians, he provided for them all. Okay. So that therefore, we see that he did fulfill, even though it was before Matan Torah, but nevertheless, all these things that the Torah mentions, he had already fulfilled in his own lifetime. And that's why he deserved to have the Aron, the coffin, or the box, whatever you want to translate it as, right, carrying his remains side by side, right, together with the ark which contained the Bris Hashem, God's covenant. Okay. Alright. Now, Gemara asks the following question. If you remember, the Mishnah pointed out that because Yosef took all the trouble to see to it that his father would be buried in Eretz Yisrael, right? And he went, actually, and he led the procession in order to go to the land of Canaan and so on and so forth to bury his father. So that, therefore, what was the reward that he had? The reward was that it would be Moshe Rabbeinu who would take his own, who would take, you know, the Atzmos Yosef, right, the remains of Yosef with him to Eretz Israel. Okay? So now the Gemara asks the following question. It says, the Eloi Osik Bei Moshe. Let's say that Moshe Rabbeinu would not be able to do this particular job. Right? So Yisrael Ohavim Asker Bei. You mean to tell me that the people of Israel wouldn't have fulfilled that mitzvah in taking care of him? So there would be other Jews to do it, right? They would have done it. The Hotziv, after all, it is written, this is already a quotation taken from the book of Joshua. Okay? Orally. Yeah. Sylvia is great in oral work.
I'm very good at oral.
Right. Okay. But yes, Atzmos Yosef Asher Ha'alu B'nei Yisrael Mitzrayim Kovu B'Shem. This is the pasuk, you see. Namely, the bones or the remains of Joseph, which the people of Israel had brought from Egypt, they buried in Shem.
Oh,
Why does he quote this? He could quote right from Bishara.
Good question. But remember, Bishara stressed, you know, that Vaikach Moshe's Atzmos Yosef. There, the stress is upon that Moshe himself did.
But
Ozzy Israel
says afterwards several times.
Okay, but that's not the point. The point is that there in Bishalach it stresses the fact Moshe was the one who did it. Okay? And then, of course, last week we read how Moshe was able to obtain, how to get Yosef's coffin to float in the River Nile, and you know, it was his prayer. Everybody else was busy trying to take as much gold and silver and everything else that they could from the Egyptians, and Moshe Rabbeinu was busy instead with the Atzmos Yosef. Okay, so that there the stress is upon Moshe. Okay, here of course in the book of Joshua Moshe is already dead, obviously. So therefore it says over here that children of Israel took it out of the children of Israel took out from Egypt, they buried in Shechem. Okay, so that's the first thing. Okay, then it says Bisu, and likewise Elo, in my book the Yud is missing, but obviously it has to be. I'm going to put it on Yud over here. Okay, Elo, you have. No, you got a better text than I have. This is the fault of what we call Habocher Hazetzer. In other words, the one who sets the time. Okay. So, Elo is Haskuba Yisrael. All right. Let us assume that the children of Israel did not take care of the burial of Yosef. Bonav lo havam is askebe. You mean to tell me that Yosef's sons would not have done it? It is written, again, the same passage in Joshua, it's written by Yil of the Yosef and Achalo, right? And in other words, the place, you know, Shechem, the place where they buried Yosef, this became a possession for the descendants, for the children of Yosef, okay? All right. So why the stress over here? So the Gemara comes with the following answer. It says, Omru, they said, Anichu lo kvodo b'merubim, Yosef b'merubim, which means that it's greater kovod for Yosef that the multitudes should come and take part in his burial rather than just a handful of people, right? Bisu, and again, Omru, another interpretation, they said, Hanichu lo, let's not argue at this point, they say, Kibodo bigdoilim Yosef Mirtad. In other words, it's more covered for him to be buried by people of importance than it is by people who are of lesser importance. Okay? All right. Continue a little bit more, and then we'll take a look at the Rashi.
I understand the first one.
Merubim means multitude in this case, okay?
Yeah. But how they count the Gedolim was in the
Tanim? Moshe dealt
with it.
But Moshe wasn't anyone.
Correct. But first of all, Moshe Rabbeinu, you're asking a good question.
He took care of it.
Yeah, all right, right. He started the process, he started the ball rolling, okay? And we'll see, they're going to refer to that in just a few moments, okay? But
Moshe,
with the head of the room,
right?
Moshe was already gone because they
because
he didn't enter Israel.
Didn't enter the land, right. Whereas they took the bones of Yosef with them, they crossed the Jordan River, okay? Together with the Ark, you know, which contained the covenant and so on, you know? And then they buried it in the city of Shechem, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the first, the schutz that Moshe himself saw to it,
right,
and to bring it to that point.
Correct.
And then Joshua was given the duty to carry on.
Yeah, correct.
And obviously,
right.
That would
right.
be the next.
Right. And of course, let's remember too, you know, that Joshua himself was a descendant of Ephraim. He belonged, you know, to the tribe of Ephraim, and so therefore we have to assume that when it says, you know, the children of Yosef We mean specifically the children of Ephraim and to a certain extent Menashe. Why do we say to a certain extent? Because if you remember, part of the tribe of Menashe decided that they liked the other side of the Jordan.
Good thing that
right.
It was not Menashe.
Yeah. Okay. So the Gedolim, of course, would be Joshua and let's say this Caleb, you know, in other words, the most important people of his generation. Been talking about it between Mincha and Marv this week in reference to the first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. But, you know, the Merubim means that they had a multitude, the people of Israel, B'nai Yisrael, they came in order to take part in the burial of Yosef's remains in Shechem. Okay? So that's the answer over there. I just want to do just a couple of more lines, then we'll go back to the Rashi. Okay? All right. So then it says, Kavru B'Shechem, right? Where do they bury him? In Shechem. Right. So the question is, Ma'ishno B'Shechem? Why, after we would just say in Shem, why did it have to be in Shem? Couldn't it be someplace else? So, Rabbi Chomo, Rabbi Chanino. So, Rabbi Chomo, Rabbi Chanino has the following explanation. He says, Mishchem Ginovuhu, Lishchem Nachsia Vedosai. Okay? He says, where was Yosef stolen from? He went to visit his brothers, right? Remember, he was bringing food and everything else. Yaakov Avinu sent him and so on. And when he came to Shechem, first he came to a place called Dothan, right? And then he wanted to know where they were and so on and so on. So somebody said to him, they've already gone on and they're there in Shechem. So when he came to Shechem, this is where they seized him and they threw him into the pit and then they sold him as a slave. Okay, so since it started over here in the city of Shechem, so that therefore now literally what was lost is now returned to Shechem. Okay?
But didn't Yaakov promise in Shechem Acher? Something over and above?
Shechem Achar Al Achecha, yeah. Correct. Of course, that's already a much more difficult process to try to figure out what do we mean by Shechem. One interpretation, the word Shechem is Taket, means the city of Shechem. That's only one interpretation. Another interpretation is that Shechem Achad means really an additional portion than what the others are getting. Right, right. Okay. Because after the word the Shechem, it's related to the word Shechem, which means a shoulder. Okay. Now the Gemara says, okay, Koshu Kiroi Ahadon. He says there's a contradiction of two different verses. Tziv, one verse says, Vayikach Moshe Satzmos Yosef Imo, right? That it was Moshe who took the bones of Yosef together with him. Then it's written with Tziv, the one that we quoted from the book of Joshua, where it's written, Vyasatzmos Yosef Asher Lubne Yisrael, etc., etc. In other words, and as far as the bones of Yosef, which the children of Israel had brought up, in other words, at this point, in this pasuk, do we find the word Moshe mentioned? No. So why this, you know, this discrepancy between, in one case, attributing it to Moshe, and in the other case, to the children of Israel? So Amar Rabbi Chomer Rabbi Chanino, so he has the following explanation. He says, Kol ho'ersa dober velo gemoro, v'acher gemoro, malo levakosu al she gemoro ki ilo aso. In other words, he says that whoever does something but he does not complete the job, okay, and then somebody else comes and he completes the job, so in that case malo levakosu, in other words, it's like he gets the credit over here, right? He gets the credit al she gemoro, right? That is concerning the one who completed it, ki ilo aso, it's as if he himself did it.
Really?
So that
the
therefore,
who starts his job, can't he appoint the Shaliach to finish it? In that case, didn't he appoint Yeshua to finish
it? Of course he could. Yeah, well, you're right.
Yeah,
of course, it's a possibility, but that's, you know, after all. A drash is a drash. And the drash is that if you don't complete the job, somebody else is going to get the credit for completing it.
Let me finish
your
job. I want the credit.
Okay. So, now we'll go up to the Rashi, and then we'll continue with the text. Okay? All right. So, the Rashi is now at the end of line 4 over there. Ksiv and so on. He says, Almoy says, we see, Li'achar Shenifta Moshe, after Moshe Rabbeinu passed away, V'arvos Moav, in the plains of Moab. You know, that's where he died, right? Because that's where the children of Israel were now encamped in their 40th year of wandering from the land of Egypt. So Nisatzku Behen Yisrael. So the children of Israel now took charge of them, meaning, of course, the Atzmas Yosef, right? The bones, the remains of Yosef, and they brought them across the Jordan River. So then they say Vesu, and likewise Elo Havnisaski Be Yisrael says, all right, let's say La'achar Shenifta Moshe, after the death of Moshe, Bona Milo Havnisaski Be. You mean to say that Moses' own sons couldn't do the job? Why did it fall upon whom?
Joshua,
the people of Israel, yeah. Right? Why did it fall upon them? How is it that Moshe Rabbeinu's sons permitted the other people to take charge? The Haksiv is written, Bishchem, right? By Yiyul of Ne'yusev, the Nachalot, it became the possession, the inheritance of the children of Yosef. So Alma, so we see, Benachalosom Kvoruhu, Dechoviv Hoyalehim. We see that Yosef was buried in a plot of land which belonged to the Bnei Yosef because they loved him. In other words, Moshe's sons didn't feel, shall we say, that same close personal attachment as Yosef's own descendants did. Omru, Bono Beatzmon, Hanichulo. So his own son said, okay, let them take care. In other words, let the children of Israel take care. Why? She's Haskibo called Yisrael, that they should take care of it. Why? Because Kvodo Bimarubim, Yosef, Nibet Muatim. Right? That it's more covered for Yosef to be buried by the multitudes than by a handful of people. Right? The Yisrael, Omru Beatzmon, and the people of Israel said, by themselves, but old Moshe Kayo. As long as Moshe was still alive, yet they already said, Hanichu, she's Askubo Moshe Levado, right? So they said, while Moshe Rabbeinu was alive, let Moshe Rabbeinu by himself take care of the Atzmos Yosef. Why? Because Kibodo Bigadolim Yosemi Tanim. Because it's more kavod to have somebody who is important take charge than to have somebody who is unimportant. So therefore, this is why we have the two different versions. One is Merubin and Mu'otin, and the other one is Gedolim Ketanim, which as we've interpreted, Merubin and Mu'otin refers to a multitude, because as we know, it says Merubom Hadras Melech, that when you have a multitude of people, there the glory of God is exalted, right? And on the other hand, the other one, that's the Gedolim, in other words, let Moshe, who's the great person, take charge, as long as he was alive, of course, because it's more common for Yosef to have a Moshe Rabbeinu take charge than it is for, let's say, some Yishmael or something like that, right? All right. Then, Mishchem Genovuhu, right? They stole him from Shem. Kiddush Sivus, the Pasuk says, Vayishalchehu Me'eme Hebron, right? That they sent him, Yaakov sent him from the valley of Hebron, right? Vayavo Shechem, and he came to Shechem. Mishom Hoyuroin, and there they were, in other words, the brothers were taking charge, they were in charge of the sheep, right? They're taking care of the sheep. And it says, Vedoson Eino Mokom. So now, why does it say, the man said they went to Dosan, so he says, Rashi says, Dosan Eino Mokom. He says, Dosan is not really a place name. The fact that the Pasuk says that the man said to Yosef, they have gone on from here, so he says, Kachamala. This is what he said to him. He said, Ato Omer, you say, it's Achai Onochi Mevakesh. I am seeking my brethren, right? So he says, Se'u, or So'u min ha'achwa ha'zois, right? V'yein ma'asik an atzman ke'achin l'cho. So he says, you know what they've done? they've discarded their brotherly love for you, and they no longer entertain brotherly love towards you. Ki shomati obrim, because I have heard them saying, Neilcho, right, says Neilcho dosoina. So he says, Neilcho, let's go. Unevakesh dosos vidinin, let's look, he says, for all kinds of legal excuses. Echla ha'niso, how to kill him. If he should happen to come. So in other words, he takes the idea of doson, dosoino, in the sense that they were looking for dosim,
bedinim,
right.
He takes it on
right.
To our own
right. They were thinking of all kinds of excuses, all kinds of, you know, how they could get away with killing Yosef. This was before they came. Okay. All right. So now, let's continue with the Gemara text over here. All right. We said a few moments ago in the text that if a person undertakes to do something but he doesn't finish the job, then in that case, who's going to get the credit for it? The one who finishes it, right? Okay. So Rabbi Elazar Omer, so he adds the following. He says, Af moridin osam dulosam. As a matter of fact, if you don't finish the job, then you know what? If you were a big man before, they're going to lower you from your being a big shot. In other words, it's going to diminish your own covet. Dichsiv, and we have a pasuk. This is a pasuk which deals with Yehuda. Okay, let's get the sequence again from the Torah. You remember in the Torah, Pasha Vayeshev begins, first of all, with the story of how Yaakov Avinu, you know, made a ksonis pasim, you know, the coat of the, whatever you call it, stripes, many colors, and the, you know, everybody has a different interpretation of what the word pasim means in that, you know, in that particular text. Today, the word means stripes, okay? So that's why I said, you know, a coat of stripes or something like that, okay? All right, at any rate, you know, and then afterwards the brothers become jealous, and so after that, what do we read? We read, you know, how they conspire to kill him, right? And then there are two different attempts made in order to save the life of Yosef, right? The first is by Reuven, who says, let's not kill him. Instead, what should we do? Throw him into the pit. Okay. Then apparently he goes away, because he doesn't enter into the conversation anymore. The Gemara in Tainus, you know, gives a good bawling out to Reuven, that if Reuven had realized what he had done, what the consequences would be, then in that particular case, he would have done much more in order to try to save actively Yosef, because after all, he was the Bechor, right? He was the firstborn, and so therefore he should have carried more weight than any of the other brothers, but he didn't do it. So instead, how was Yosef saved? So, you know, along comes Yehuda, and, you know, he's the one who suggests that, okay, let's take him out of the pit, and then at this particular moment, so Anashim Midonim or Midyonim, and so, you know, they pass by over there, and so they decide to sell him as a slave. Okay. All right. The next chapter is the story about Yehuda and Tamar. Right, okay. Now, in the story of Yehuda and Tamar, of course, we have already spoken about Tamar herself, because, and Yehuda, in the sense that we mentioned the fact how important it is to recognize that if you sin, admit it, so that you can get forgiveness, right? When Yehuda recognized the fact that Tamar was right, and that he had really denied unto her what should have been hers by right, so he said, you know, tzot ko memeni, she is more righteous than I am. And as we saw, even in the Gemara, it said, you know, that Yehuda, it bears within the name itself, the idea of Hodah. What is Hodah? Hodah in Hebrew has two basic ideas in it.
Thanks.
Yeah, the one meaning is to give thanks, but the other one is to confess something. Right. You admit, you confess, and so on. Okay? So, that being the case, he did tshuva by confessing his sins, and then he did tshuva, you see. And for this reason, he was rewarded subsequently, and of course, rewarded in what way? In that his descendants would eventually become, you know, the descendants from him and from Tamar would eventually become Jewish royalty, okay? Because from Peretz, eventually David himself was descended several generations later, okay? All right, but here they talk about the very beginning of the chapter, where it's written, and it came to pass at that very time, by Yered Yehuda, right, that Yehuda went down. So the word that they're commenting on is the word by Yered, went down. Rabbi Shmuel ben Nachmeni Omar, that's already another thing. All right, but the idea of Vayered means that Yorad Migdulasa. Here he was considered, you know, the brother to whom all the brothers now looked up in order to have advice, and yet at this particular point, in this whole business with Tamar, and, you know, the fact that he denied her after having been the father of a couple of Paskudnyakas, you know, who didn't want to behave, right? Remember, she was married, if you remember, to other sons, right, and of Yehuda, right, and so on, right, Onan, right, and they were bad guys, okay,
all right,
yes, they were Paskudnyakas, okay,
the Hebrew word,
yes, that's not a Hebrew word, Paskudnyakas, it's a good Slavic word, okay.
Tamar was pregnant with Judah's child,
yeah,
who
correct.
Was the child?
Twins,
twins.
Peretz and Zerah,
that's where Peretz comes from,
right. Okay, so Vayered Yehuda shows then that because, you know, he didn't do the job that he should have finished, namely what? To save Yosef, bring him back to Yaakov, because he didn't do that, so that's why Vayered Yehuda, he went down in COVID and in Gedula and everything else, okay? Rabbi Shmuel ben Nachmeni Yomar, he adds the following, he says, Ab koger ishto yevonav. His punishment will be that he will bury his wife and his children. Yechsev, as we find, well, of course, I mean, it's based again, you know, on the story of Yehuda. It's written, first of all, about Thomas Bashua Eshes Yehuda, right? That Bashua, the wife of Yehuda, died. And then Yechsev, and afterwards it's written, Vayomas Er V'Onun, right? That Er died, Onun died, and so on and so on. It shows, you know, that the punishment is not only that he lost his gedula, but also it affected his own family as well. Okay. Omer Rav Yehuda Omer Rav, Mipnei Ma Nikra Yosef Atzomos Bechayov. Okay. He is criticizing over here Yosef from a different point of view. I mean, until now we've been lauding Yosef, but Yosef too comes in for a little criticism sometimes, right? He says, why is it that Yosef is referred to as atzomos, in other words, literally bone, in what sense? Well, he says to his brothers, right, v'halisim es atzmos abizeh, take up my bones from here. So already in his own lifetime, he was already referring to himself as being bones, okay? So, why? So he says, b'pnei shalom micho b'chvod aviv. The reason is because he never made a protest when his father's honor was being impugned. In what way? Right. The brothers said to Yosef, right?
Avdecho
Avinu, right. Right. Avdecho Avinu, our father who is your servant. So, of course, I mean, the point is, you know, that he should immediately have stopped and said, what do you mean? My father is my servant? No, nothing doing. But he never did that. Of course, he didn't do it because he didn't want to let on to the brothers who he was, right? Okay. But nevertheless, he's criticized because of that. He did not acknowledge the honor that was due to his father, right? Velo amaluhu velo mina. He didn't say anything to them, right? He didn't make any protest, whatever. V'yomer Rav Yehuda Omer Rav. Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav, he says, V'itemo, and there are those who say, Rabbi Choma v'Rabbi Chanino. That was Mipnei Ma Meis Yosef Kodem Liechav. Why is it that in the Torah it says Vayomos Yosef V'Kol Echav, that Joseph died and all his brothers V'Kol Adorahu, and after that the entire generation, you know, Yosef and his brothers in that generation. In other words, who died first?
Joseph.
Yosef, right. So he wants to know, what reason is it that Yosef died prior to his brothers? We would say maybe they had better genes, but that's not the point. You have a drash over here. Okay.
Well, that's a better life than this.
Well, the answer that he gives is as follows. He says, the answer is because he conducted himself with the airs of superiority. Right? In other words, he made himself a big shot, and he conducted himself with the airs of a big shot. We know, I mean, after all, he was second to Pharaoh and so on. But I guess he felt that Yosef didn't have to lord it over them the way he did. He could have maybe approached them earlier and so on. I mean, just as the previous idea said, as soon as he heard, you know, that his father's honor was being impugned, and in that case he should have done something in order to show them, you know, that he is after all their brother, and he is just as much obligated to honor their father as the brothers were.
They also in any way discuss the fact, I think he did worse than that, I think that he created additional anxiety and worry to the nth degree in the father by the by his actions in holding Daniel in.
Yes,
and,
right.
So that he not only did...
Well, first he
him,
held Shimon, if you remember.
Right, okay.
First Shimon was taken prisoner, and then after that, of course, you know, insisting this whole deal with the cup and that he was going to keep Benjamin.
He demanded that Benjamin come down to Egypt, which caused a lot of anxiety.
And here was the father worrying he's going to lose this other dear son also.
Mm-hmm.
And so not only did he not honor him, but he created... And the man was already an aged man, and he's creating this terrible anxiety in him.
But there was a great purpose for it, because the brothers could not receive forgiveness until they had come and experienced the same thing again and did not commit the same sin.
You're right. Which goes to show us, which goes to show us that there are many, many different ways of interpreting the story of Yosef and his brothers, and his, you know, their relation with the fathers. No question about it.
Right, just as they question his not honoring him, I think that this is another point in that category.
And Yosef is the only one who's called the tzaddik.
With Potiphar's wife. That's the reason, because he resisted temptation,
But then you call it tzaddik regardless of what else may happen, and we're saying about the criticism.
So we have to say that even tzaddikim are not 100% perfect.
Right. Which is the way it's supposed to be.
Right. We all have a little touch of sin and error, and you know what are you going to say? We have a Yetzer Hara, unfortunately. Or fortunately, I don't know. You know, the right.
Maybe Yosef was also trying to tell his father that playing favorites doesn't work very well, and look what it did to him.
Right.
And now he's trying it again.
Right.
And you know that he should understand that all of his sons should be as important to him as any other one, and that he should not be playing favorites. And maybe that was his way of teaching his father a lesson too.
Well, it's tough to tell somebody who himself was a favorite of his mother.
Classic case of sibling rivalry, of course. Yaakov and Esau.
There isn't, there's no fun. If you want to have a dozen kids and everything goes perfect without any problems.
Right. Doesn't happen too often. But at any rate, what's interesting to me is the fact that each one of you is coming up with a different slant upon this whole idea. And as we can see, even among the sages, you know, that they did not look upon it simply as a monolithic story, so to speak. In other words, you know, one thing and that's all. But they see all kinds of different things that are happening over here. I just want to conclude with another one. An alternate version of this, you know, about the Avdecha Avinu, that he didn't protest when he heard it and so on. They say, how come all the years that Yosef was in Egypt, how come he never sent a message home to his father to say that I'm alive? He never did that. And so therefore, they say that's the reason why he was punished. Right. Okay.
Well,
yes.
Well, as a matter of fact, if he would have sent
he had no idea the Prophet was going to unfold. Well, maybe.
What were you saying?
Okay.
If he had sent a message, Yaakov may have come or may have said, you come and see me.
Yeah.
I mean, Yaakov didn't go until the...
right, at the very end over there, you know, when he sends the brothers back to
the
right.
There was no way of staying there.
Right. And over there, if you remember, it's written that when Yaakov finally found out, first of all, it says, Vayofak libo, which means literally that his heart stopped, so to speak. Because he couldn't believe the news, you know, that Yosef was still alive and so on.
And he never
right. Yeah.
He never really mourned.
Yeah.
It was still that the sign that he always thought he was alive somehow.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, there are all kinds of interpretations about Yaakov's behavior.
There are other interpretations that he mourned all his life, and that
he never was free of it.
If somebody said the mourner mourns and slowly never stops mourning, but he decides that's the way it is. Yaakov never did that.
And of course, remember what he said to Pharaoh. He comes finally and has the royal, you know, he has the royal audience with Pharaoh. So Pharaoh asks him, how old are you? So he says, you know, Ma'at v'royim, ho yu yimei chayai, right? Few and bad were the days of my life, right? And not only that, but I'll never attain the age of my father's either, you know. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Gemara continues over here. Yeah.
It's a good movie.
There's no question.
Very good written about that.
Right.
Thomas Mann.
Yeah, Thomas Mann wrote that three volumes on Joseph and his brothers. Right. Okay. The Yosef Hurat Mitzrayim. All right. And then it's written, of course, that Joseph is brought down to Egypt, right? So Omer Rabbi Lozer. So Rabbi Lozer says, Al Tikre Hurat Elo Horid. Says, don't interpret it as hurad. He was brought down, but rather he actively brought down others. What did he bring down? Of course, we were thinking, you know, he brought down his brothers, but it didn't happen at this point. But what is it? Shehorid, it's tagnine paro bidulosan. What he did was to bring down the fortune tellers, the soothsayers, the wise people, you know, that Pharaoh had. And he showed them that, you know, for all the gedula that they had, that they were not...